Okay, let's talk about this here. Jen Jackson Quintana is here as the executive director of the Pro Voice Project, and tonight you are hosting an event, OBGYN Care on the Line, which has been billed as a community conversation. First tell us when and where.
Okay, that's happening this evening at the library here in Sandpoint, and it's starting at 5:30 to 7. People are welcome to come and mingle for a little bit. When they arrive, we're going to have an informational display up about systemic barriers to reproductive health care access. And a part of that is a lack of OBGYNs here in this community. You know, we lost all four of ours. It's almost 3 years ago that we lost that. So that's going to be the main focus of the conversation. And the format that we're going with, some people may remember we partnered with the Idaho Humanities Council a couple years ago on some community conversations. And we're going with a similar format where we'll sit in a circle. No one's presenting. No one's an expert here. No one's, you know, there's no hierarchy here. It's people. We're all in community together. So we're all going to sit together in this circle and have a conversation. We've got a moderator coming from Coeur d'Alene, and I'll help her to kind of direct conversation. And we have some prompts to get people talking. We have some stories that have been shared with us about a lack of OBGYN care access here in Sandpoint and what that's meant for individuals and families. We have a story from a physician who left. And we have some maps that people can look at to show how far people are having to travel in the state of Idaho to access care. So we'll just use those as entry points to conversation. And we'll also have some care providers from the region that are a part of this conversation. So they'll be sitting together with us, and we'll be there to contribute to the conversation, but also be resources for information. People have a lot of questions about where to go and what kind of care they can get where. And so we'll have some physicians and nurse practitioners there that can kind of answer those questions as a part of the conversation.
Okay. Well, it sounds like a good one. And no presentation, but will you be kind of introducing will you be presenting opening remarks?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. We'll welcome everyone and kind of give them a sense for what to expect for the evening, and share, you know, what prompted this conversation to be organized. But I think Joyce at the library and I were in agreement that there are a lot of panel discussions, a lot of presentations out there. It would be nice to have something different, especially related to healthcare here. So that's where the idea of the community conversation came in, because I'm really eager to hear stories from people in the community about how this is impacting them. You know, we know the bigger picture. Okay, we had four OBGYNs leave, labor and delivery closed. We know that people are going to Newport, people are going to Libby, people are going to Coeur d'Alene, Post Falls, Spokane. But what does that look like? How does that impact people? You know, I think it's important to be hearing those stories so we can kind of connect empathically with, you know, what this new reality is. And I also think it's an important chance just to dispel some misinformation that's out there about the care that's available. You know, like some people will say, well, I just Googled Sandpoint Women's Health and it still shows up. So it's still there, you know. Well, just because there's an artifact on the internet from a time when we had OBGYNs here, it doesn't mean we still have them. And so for people who aren't as connected to this, for people who aren't currently pregnant or haven't been pregnant in the past few years or haven't had a family member who has been, I think this is a chance for the community to see that there are real impacts from this and that women's health care is really important. It's not some niche, you know, care aspect of care. It's important to this entire community and the health of this community.
Yeah. I mean, one of the only, if you count your own birth, then it's one of the only things that almost everybody is going to need at some point.
Exactly. Yeah.
Only those born, I don't know. Yeah, I guess outside of a hospital without the use of a doctor is are the people who won't use it.
Yeah. And to that point, Jack, people will argue, well, we still have midwives here and the midwives are great and, you know, we can lean on them. And yes, that is absolutely true. And when I was pregnant with my daughter, I went with the services of a midwife and it was great. She came out to our cabin for prenatal appointments, drove 8.5 miles out Rapid Lightning Road to come visit me. She was marvelous. But when the time came to deliver my daughter, things didn't go according to plan, as happens, right? Mm-hmm. And this was 11 years ago. So thankfully, we were able to make the long, bumpy drive down Rapid Lightning and get to BGH, where I was able to have a C-section and have a healthy child. So I am grateful for the midwives, and they're carrying a lot of weight in this community right now. But I just worry about the lack of the safety net close by, mm-hmm. the lack of a backstop there. So that's, you know, those are the stories that I want to be hearing and the stories I want people to connect with. Like, yes, we are grateful for our midwifery community. And it's nice to have someone who can perform a C-section or provide other, you know, potentially emergency care when those emergencies arise.
Mm-hmm. So right now, I know people are out there who presently and people in the past who did not seek prenatal care. You know, they just out there hanging out and waited until they were going to have a baby, and they would go to the ER and deliver at the ER. And then if they needed a C-section, the C-section would be done there at the ER because we had the surgeons to do it and all of that. So I'm wondering, do we have any numbers of actual deliveries that are being done at BGH now through the ER?
I don't have specific numbers. Last year, you know, I was hearing stories of a few here and there. They even delivered twins there at BGH last year, but it is not their preference to be providing that care in the ER. It's not what they're specifically trained for.
Right.
There's a lot of risk that they're taking on to provide that care. It would be their preference that people are birthing, you know, in emergency situations, especially with trained obstetricians.
Right.
Who can provide C-sections and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it is a backstop, to your point. It is, the ER is there, but it's not the same level of care and level of training that you would have if there was an OB present.
Mm-hmm. So I guess I'm wondering if, because of that, and that's not what they want to be doing, do we have any information on what BGH's role is in bringing back that kind of care?
I would love to hear this, and I would put it out there, you know, if anyone from admin at BGH is listening, please, we would love to have you come tonight. You have a lot of information that the community would like to hear. And I feel like there isn't a lot of information coming out of BGH. I know they have their hands full, not just with, you know, this issue of labor and delivery, but a whole host of other issues. And I understand that they've got a lot on their plate. But gosh, I think the community is hungry to hear more mm-hmm. from our local hospital. You know, tonight we will have representatives from labor and delivery coming from Newport Hospital, and we'll also have representatives coming from Kootenai Health. So it would be great to also have our local hospital represented there to share what's happening here, what they can offer, and what they're hoping to offer in the future.
So when the services of OBGYN were no longer available in town, the kind of larger explanation was the state laws that were created, which never made sense to me because they were still providing those services in Coeur d'Alene. So what was different about the decision not to continue with OBGYN services in Sandpoint as opposed to other places? Do we know that?
There are great differences depending on which hospital or hospital system that you're working with. So larger hospital systems, I think, have more resources to protect their OBGYNs, offer a level of protection to them to say, you offer the standard of care. And if the question arises, we've got your back. It's harder for smaller hospitals to do that, is my understanding. And of course, BGH had other issues at play too. Part of it was the laws and the physicians here, their fear of working under the, you know, confines of those laws, not being able to provide the kind of care that they had in the past with miscarriages. But part of it was financial too. It's hard as a rural hospital to continue to provide labor and delivery care. Newport has figured it out. They're a very small hospital. They figured it out. It's not impossible, but there were multiple factors that were weighing heavily on BGH. So in talking to OBs at Coeur d'Alene, it sounds like they feel like Kootenai Health has got their back, that they can provide the standard of care and not question whether that is going to come back to bite them, whether someone's going to question their decision making. Hmm. And it's similar with the larger hospital systems elsewhere in Idaho.
Hmm. That's interesting that Newport, Washington, to me anyway, is able to provide OB care. The population, I think, is about a quarter. The population of the town proper is about a quarter that of Sandpoint, and they don't have those out, you know, their equivalent of Ponderay and Kootenai and stuff.
Right. Yeah. So I'm really excited that they're going to be represented tonight so we can hear how they made that work. You know, mm-hmm. is that a model that we could follow here? You know, it is a little bit trickier here. Washington has different laws related to pregnancy care. But it provides a glimmer of hope because there mm-hmm. is a narrative nationally that, oh, rural hospitals can't support labor and delivery. You know, it's closing all over the place. But there are places that are finding a way forward, and I think we can learn from that.
This is probably where we should have started the conversation, but just for anybody who's just tuning in, we're talking to Jen Jackson-Quintano. She's the executive director of the ProVoice Project and host of an event tonight at the library from 5:30 to 7 called OBGYN Care on the Line. And that's a sort of a public forum, a community conversation as it's built. Was it 3 years ago that, okay, so would you, maybe we can all kind of do this together, fill in the details, but 3 years ago we had had for a very long period of time OBGYN care here in Sandpoint at Bonner General Health, and they 3 years ago closed basically. What happened at that time for anybody who's new to the area or who doesn't remember exactly the details?
Yeah, so I think we had labor and delivery care here for over 50 years. Mm-hmm. It's a long mm-hmm. time. Generations of Sandpoint residents were born there.
Yeah.
And so we've made it work here in the past, right? And then it was March a few years ago that Bonner General released this press release saying we can no longer provide labor and delivery care. And because they mentioned the laws as being a part of their the reasoning for closing, saying that their OBGYNs couldn't work under laws that didn't allow them to provide the standard of care in all situations, the press descended. You know, mm-hmm. we were seen as the first casualty of the Dobbs decision, which Dobbs was the decision, the Supreme Court decision that unraveled Roe v. Wade, which, you know, promised a right to abortion care to anyone in the country. Now this is sent back to the states. So in Idaho, Idaho's taken a strong stand that they do not want to allow abortion care here. And the way that intersects with the OBs that we had here, miscarriage, pregnancy is complicated. Miscarriage is very complicated. And miscarriage doesn't always just go according to plan. Sometimes a woman will need help, you know, completing a miscarriage. And the same treatments for that are the ones that we use for abortion, right? There's no delineation between the two if you're an obstetrician. And so our OBs here, we're really struggling with, gosh, I have a woman who's come in and she's in a crisis situation. She's hemorrhaging. There's an infection, you know, whatever it is. And if I offer this care, am I going to get in trouble for this, you know? And so this was very stressful for our OBs. and they were all considering leaving. And it became stressful for the hospital too, the liability, the moral injury that the physicians were enduring. So they made the decision to close labor and delivery. And all four of our OBGYNs left after that. They all went to states that do not have similar restrictions on abortion. So by, I think it was by May of 2023, we were without OBGYNs. We were without a labor and delivery department. So I think it's important to recognize this hasn't just impacted people who are pregnant. Mm-hmm. It's impacted all women, you mm-hmm. know, because gynecological care is something you need throughout your lifetime. And there isn't much of that left here. People are having to travel to Coeur d'Alene or Spokane for care that they used to just be able to do on their lunch break, go across the street and go to BGH. So it's impacting a broad section of our population here.
Mm-hmm. At the event tonight, people can go and ask their questions and give their own answers. If somebody's a little timid and doesn't want to speak publicly but is interested in hearing the conversation, are you allowed to just observe?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. I think there's just as much to be gleaned from coming to listen to your community as there is in sharing your own stories. I think as many people as we can have there, that's helpful, and we're all going to learn something.
Mm-hmm. So. And again, you mentioned some of the people who are going to be there. There's representatives from the Newport Hospital, the hospital in Coeur d'Alene, and Kootenai Health in Coeur d'Alene. And I think you said that you were going to be sharing a story of one of the former. Is the doctor actually going to be here?
No.
One of the former doctors.
Yeah, Amelia Huntsberger,
who
used to practice here, who actually delivered my daughter. Mm-hmm. We'll share a bit of her story about why she left here, mm-hmm. and then we'll be hearing some stories from area women who have struggled to access care here. We have had something called the Receiver. It's a sort of mobile storytelling booth. We've had mm-hmm. this traveling around town for the past month, trying to collect stories from the community about how this loss of care has impacted them. So we'll be sharing a couple stories that we collected from that as well.
Okay. Very neat. And the event will last for about an hour and a half. And again, it's at the library, I suppose, in the community room. Are you putting them together, combining those?
I think we might. I think we might have a decent turnout
this evening. Imagine so.
Yeah. It seems like there's been a lot of interest in mm-hmm. this because it hasn't been much of a public topic of conversation recently. So I think people are curious to hear, you know, what's happening now, what the state of care is now.
Yeah. What's new? Let's see. Any more details of that particular event that we should share before maybe we talk about what else is going on with the Pro Voice Project?
I think that's it. Just this mm-hmm. ties in with an exhibit we've had up at the library for the past month. Just we have some maps up in the display cases that show, you know, drive times to access care in Idaho, kind of giving you a sense of where we've lost Idaho obstetrics providers. And there's also a map showing where people are accessing maternal fetal medicine specialists, and those are the doctors that deal with complex pregnancies. And there's really just two places in the state now, Boise and Coeur d'Alene, where those physicians are available. So it shows you, you know, they'll look like, gosh, if you live in eastern Idaho, central Idaho, it's a long haul to get specialized care. So those panels are still up in the lobby right now if people wanted to visit ahead of tonight's event.
What is Boundary County doing for OBGYN care?
Yeah, some are traveling to Coeur d'Alene for delivery. Some are traveling to Libby. That's the closest for them, is to go across state lines to Libby. And I am curious to hear stories of how it works with insurance coverage when you're having mm-hmm. to travel to other states to get care. My understanding is it's possible, but it does require some paperwork, some pre-authorizations. It might be a little bit onerous to, you know, get insurance coverage for that out-of-state care. And so I would love to learn more about that. Like, is Libby a good option for Bonner's Ferry folks, or is it a challenge for them to go there?
Indeed. Let's see. Talk about the anybody else, by the way, you want to highlight who is going to be there at this? Did you mention everybody who's been invited, who's confirmed?
Yeah, I think we're also going to have some nurse practitioners from our community that will be there to offer their perspective on the care that's available here, and just their knowledge as care providers in general. So I think we'll have a good broad cross-section of healthcare providers there that can help answer our questions and contribute to the conversation.
Okay, cool. The Pro Voice Project is you started at right around this same time, maternal healthcare was lost here in Sandpoint. You started a project called the Pro Voice Project, and you've been busy for these 3 or 4 years now. What's new? What's the latest? I know I believe you were in Boise not too long ago.
Yeah, I was just in Boise day before yesterday, interviewing physicians down there who offer obstetrics care, just to talk to them about how their practices have changed in recent years, the challenges that they face, solutions that they're finding to those challenges. And one thing I'm hearing from them is with the loss of so many OBs, their patient load is increasing dramatically.
Yeah.
Excuse me. And so it's hard to provide the level of care, you know, the amount of time with patients that they want to spend, the timely care is difficult to provide. It was really powerful to hear their stories. So we filmed those interviews, and we have a couple short documentaries that we've made so far about patient experiences in Idaho, and we'll soon be making another one that focuses on what it's like to be a physician here. Because I think there is a tendency to want to lay blame at the feet of doctors. Like, why aren't you doing more? You know, there are laws that are impacting how you provide care. But why don't you just provide the care anyway? Why don't you care for this person that needs it right now? Like, that's your job as a doctor. And I think it's important to hear their stories. They are parents, they are spouses, they have family that relies on them, they have community that relies on them. This is a really challenging time and climate for them to work in, and they do face a lot of moral distress and kind of bring their work home with them. And I think it's important to hear that. So we'll be elevating those stories, and people can find the stories that we have on theprovoiceproject.com. And then we've got a couple events coming up in Seattle, actually, this coming weekend.
Ooh.
We have a stage performance there called One Body. It's happening on Saturday. And then the following weekend, Sunday, February 1st, we have another event called Speak Easier that will be in the Seattle area. People can find more information on our website. But the second event is, we're going to have Idaho storytellers coming to Seattle, which is a very progressive space, as everyone knows, and share their experiences of what it's like living here. A lot of people from progressive spaces tend to look at Idaho and say, well, if you're having to travel out of state for care for your pregnancy, your miscarriage, whatever, like, you voted for that, you know, that's on you. That's a reaction I hear a lot. And so I think it's important to bring complex individuals, which we all are, from Idaho to Seattle and just talk about our experiences and give a sense of who we all are in the round, answer questions. So we'll have 5 or 6 storytellers there. And then we'll be modeling the presentation off of something that the library does here. We'll have our storytellers be living books. They can sit down at a table in the audience, and audience members can approach them and hear more about their stories.
So is the Pro Voice Project a local thing, or is this, you are local and you're not hooked up with a national?
We're local. We're Sandpoint based.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's just been me for a number of years. We now have another half-time employee here, and we have one down in Boise.
And how do you get funded to, or it's, I assume you're it's, need money.
Yeah. Yes. It's largely individual donations, people who come to our events and are moved by them, feel like this work is important. We have gotten a couple grants in the past year. So it's working out so far, but mostly it's through the merit of the work that we're getting funded. It really resonates with people. We are, at our heart, a storytelling organization. And I think that's the best way to build empathy, to build understanding. People tend to kind of shut down when you're discussing facts or you're aggressively promoting your opinion about something. But if you're sharing your story, people can sink into that. You know, we can connect that way. And so we're trying to address stigma that surrounds reproductive health care. It's hard to talk about it. Mm-hmm. People don't, women especially, don't often go there conversationally, right? So if we can share our stories, then it's easier to speak about this. We can create space to talk about our reproductive health journeys and get people to listen and understand what it's all about and how important it is to have care.
So two questions. Are you a 501c3?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. And second, will you be recording this event from the library so it's part of your resource library to share with people? Or what are you doing with
that? I will
that?
Not. We won't be recording tonight. And that's simply because I want people to feel comfortable sharing and being vulnerable in the moment and not feel like their words will be collected and put out there. You know, this is a safe space. This is, we're not having anyone connect by Zoom. You know, it's just the people in the room who are going to be there.
Okay.
So there won't be any recording from that.
Okay.
But we will be recording the stories shared at our Seattle event.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of our other performances, not community conversations, but performances, we do record those stories.
It is 8:35. And we're going to find out if there's anybody else here to join us, or we'll keep talking to Jen. I'm going to take a brief musical break, and we're going to play one that I thought was pretty appropriate, giving the topic of conversation of having OBGYN care here in Sandpoint. It was on this date 60 years ago that the Beach Boys went into Gold Star Studios to begin recording this song. And I imagine you've heard it before. Here's the Beach Boys. We'll be back here on the morning show in just a minute. Get comfortable. We're here at the morning show. You're listening to it. We're live on the radio, folks. My name's Jack Peterson, and we just said adios to Jen Jackson Quintano. And thanks again for dropping by, Jen. Talk about the upcoming event tonight at the library, OBGYN Care on the Line. Hopefully everybody is able to attend that if they're interested. It sounds like a good conversation. There's something else coming up at the library. There's always something up coming up at the library. And we are now here with Olivia Gonzalez and Kara Johnson. Pronounced correctly?
That's right.
That's what I thought. Yeah. Okay. Kara Johnson. Kara is the seed librarian at the library.
Mm-hmm. And the garden coordinator.
And garden coordinator. Yep. And Olivia, your official title at the farmer's market is?
Market manager.
Okay, the market manager for the farmer's market. And this weekend is the the winter farmer's market,
mm-hmm.
which has thus far, the first two have been awfully successful.
Yes.
And this weekend is going to be probably yet another success.
Yeah.
A lot of people go to these.
I've been mm-hmm. so just amazed and pleased with how this event has turned out. We've had every vendor space full every time. And again, same thing this time. And then the community has just really turned up in an amazing way. And so it's been really rewarding and fun.
Yeah.
Where do you set up inside the library?
Yeah, so we, on kind of the far end, there's two community rooms mm-hmm. that we open up, and just makes a big open space. And then we have some vendors kind of trickling through in the lobby, too. And then we always have a musician playing in the lobby, which is really fun. And, yeah. Yeah.
Have you ever asked if you can go into the library itself, the books, hide the vendors in among the stacks? I think that would be cool.
That would be really melt you.
Yeah, you got to find them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You have to whisper as you
That's
shop.
Right. Yeah, the carrots are up in adult fiction, G to H. Yeah. Okay. But it will be at the library. You go through the big doors, and instead of going into the book department, you go to the left and head down and check out the farmer's market. I bet if you get to the library, you can't miss it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause you pretty much take over the space.
Mm-hmm.
Who's playing music?
Carly Osica. She was one of my favorite artists who played last summer. She's singer-songwriter, a mom. She's super sweet and just a really incredible musician. So I'm excited to have her.
Okay. I'm going to have to ask you about that off the air. How do we get in touch with Carly Osica? Where's she from?
Nearby. Mm-hmm. I think maybe she grew up here and just moved back. I can't quite remember. But she's somewhere close by and kind of just getting back into playing locally. And
cool.
Yeah.
I've seen she's been playing at Connie's too.
Okay.
Yeah.
You can find her there. And you can hear her at the farmer's market.
And that's the plug for Carly.
There you go.
Yep.
Anything else at this particular farmer's market? Anything different from the last two, say?
We always have the library provides some sort of a craft in the lab there, like on the way to the down to the market zone. There is in the lab there's some sort of a craft that we do each time, and that has really been such a fun aspect to these markets. It's a creative space. We have something that we've designed for people to make that's a bit of a guided thing. The first one were centerpieces with all these nature objects. The second one were garlands using old holiday cards and paper and string. And just it fills up with all generations of people, and it's full the whole 4 hours, and people are in there, people who don't know each other, being creative together. It's been really magical, and I'm hearing from parents that their children, you know, when they hear in the morning, we're going to the farmer's market today, and they're, like, so pumped about the craft room. Mm-hmm. So we'll have that again this time. It'll be a bird feeder that people can make. But we also have a seat swap at this one that we'll have across the hall. So there'll be a ton going on this time. There'll be a lot provided there by the library. So the seat swap's kind of like a plant swap, but with seeds. And we'll have several local seed farmers there that are just amazing people to meet and learn from. And people can bring seeds that they need to pass on or just come and get seeds. Really, the focus is the locally adapted seeds, so seeds that have been harvested from here, from gardens here or farmers here. So meaning they have like at least one layer of intelligence in the seed for being successful here in North Idaho. And it's part of the seed library program.
Mm-hmm.
The seed library is kind of an always there collection of all types of seed, but a lot of it's for to create a community held collection of locally adapted seeds where you can go and trade there all the time. But this is way more fun because it's all of us getting together and being social.
Yeah. I like that your use of the word intelligence there. The seeds have one generation at least, or one layer of intelligence here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Each time a plant is grown anywhere, it's like adapting very quickly to the light cycle, the latitude of that place, to the soil microbes, any events that happen that it deals with, smoke or or wind or any of that. Mm-hmm. You know, water, the season length, all of that it'll adapt to and then put that knowledge into its seed. So each time it grows here, it just gets better and better and better at being successful in this place. Yeah. And so it's really a treasure, these seeds that people are keeping, being stewards of here. And then there's the seed saving skills that go into the seeds as well. So people are gathering seeds from the most healthy or robust ones, or like lettuce, let's say. The lettuces that bolt last in the season, like they're the most heat tolerant ones, mm-hmm. that would be a good one to gather seed from. So
when people bring their seeds, do they identify the characteristics of the particular seed? So mm-hmm. if you're looking for a lettuce that doesn't bolt until later in the, is it mm-hmm. like written down on the packets or wherever the medium is that you choose them from? Does it say?
There'll be a wide variety, just like a plant swap of yeah. what people are bringing. But yes, at this particular event, there are going to be several people there that are very good at this, and they're producing a lot of seed here.
With the characteristics of the particular seed.
Sure, yeah. And then we're also, this is an opportunity, we're looking for seed stewards, people to grow things out. We have a number of seeds that need a steward that have been grown here, and we need someone to grow them again this upcoming season and save seed from them to grow the collection, you know, to bulk them out so we have more seed to provide, and then also just to put another layer of intelligence mm-hmm. on the seed. And, you know, this is always part of gardening, you know, always part of growing your own food is saving the seed, of course. You know, now with more of the commodification of seed and, you know, we have these fancy, beautiful catalogs we get to look at and order our seeds from far away usually. Mm-hmm. But we're really trying to close the loop, to bring that back, seed saving back into gardening. You know, part of that is sharing seed with each other. And this is an event like this where you come together and I have these seeds, you have these seeds, and we can trade. And
so, cool. So is any of the seed produced by the garden there at the library?
Yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So there'll be a number of things there that we grew at the library. And that's a limited space. We do a lot of programming and other mm-hmm. other work there. So those are some that we do need stewards to come and then take to their gardens. Like several stewards for each one would be great. That helps with the genetics. But then to bulk that out, you would say, you know, to grow more of it. So mm-hmm. that it just, I mean, it's amazing how much a single plant produces of seeds. Like one teeny tiny seed will make one big plant that makes hundreds more seeds, you know. So the exponential growth of plant seed is really, it really like bucks the whole scarcity idea, you know. Life just wants life and it just keeps mm-hmm. going. But you know, I think it's really a vital part of life and part of a community to be keeping our own seed and adapting our garden plants to where we live.
So what kind of seeds from the library's garden need stewards? What kind of plants?
We have some broccoli. We have some two types of basil. We have pak choi. What else? We have some carrots. That's all I can think of right now from the library particularly. But we also have some other things from seed stewards who have been partnering with us as well.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. We're talking to Kara Johnson, the seed librarian and garden coordinator for the East Bonner County Library, as well as Olivia Gonzalez, market manager for the Farmers Market at Sandpoint, about what's coming up at the library. Did we mention already the date and the time? It's this Saturday mm-hmm. from?
January 24th from 10 to 2.
From 10 to 2.
Yep.
And the seed swap is going to be more like a 10 to noon.
Okay.
And I put it there so we can all show up at the same time.
Yeah. You know? Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Have you done seed swaps before?
Yes, the library has. Okay. And yes, yeah. It's January is the National Seed Swap month, you know? Yeah. It's that kind of that time of year where we're planning our gardens and getting ready for that.
Let's see. Speaking of planning for gardens and markets and things, where are you in kind of the planning for this summer's farmers market?
Yeah, so we've started planning. We have kind of gotten our recommitments from our current members to see who's coming back and see what we have. Our applications will open for new vendors probably mid-February. And then it's kind of an intensive time of reviewing those applications, our board reviews and juries, all items. And then we go from there. Although farmers are allowed to apply anytime. So farmers and growers, there's no kind of specific application period for that. So if you are a farmer, you're interested in participating, you can just reach out on our website. We've got our email and phone there. And we're looking forward to another big season.
When you are, you probably get more applicants than you can possibly take.
Yes.
Right? Than there are spots
for. Very, very selective.
Yeah. Yeah. So what are you, are there any things you're looking for right now? Anything, we don't have any something?
You know, I think we're always looking for people who grow things and make things from things that they've grown. That's what the market is always prioritizing. Mm-hmm. I can't think of anything off the top of my head. It's extremely selective. They really want items that are made with significant creative input, mm-hmm. preferably from locally sourced ingredients or, materials. I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm. Corn? Do you have somebody selling corn?
Corn, yes. We do need corn. Yep. Corn's great. One, definitely. Yeah. Boy, people were devastated last season when our beloved corn man retired. So
he wasn't there?
He's retired.
That's such an event when he comes with the big bags and just sells like instantly.
Yeah, it all
goes. We did have a few farmers that kind of picked up the slack and had some corn available. So that was really great. But we did not have, we could use a corn grower for sure.
Okay. Somebody must grow corn around here.
I know.
Yeah.
In search of.
Does the farmers market control what portion of I guess the farmers market is in Farm and Park?
Yes.
And then you also close off the street adjacent.
Yep. Oak Street.
And but you are also in control of who's in the Oak Street area as well. And that tends to be kind of goods made the handcrafts rather than grown things. Yeah.
Yep, we're in control of the Oak Street, not the Oak Street food court. That's kind of a whole separate thing.
That's separate.
Mm-hmm. But our Oak Street has people who are selling hot food, who cook things for the market, which we have just a few of those. Mm-hmm. And then mostly, crafters and maybe a baker or two in that area.
Yeah.
Depending. Yeah.
And the bookmobile sometimes.
The bookmobile, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. It's a great addition.
From the library. Okay. Mm-hmm. You're going to keep that same footprint? Have you ever thought about expanding into, I don't know where? I guess it'd be the other street. What is that, Main? That diagonal?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't, it's a city thing. We actually, the market does have the fountain space if we needed to use it. And we do use it for kids' day. Mm-hmm. And I think if we ever had a really high influx of participants, maybe we would use that space. But the board, the vision for the organization is always to kind of keep it. We have pretty strict parameters on what we allow to be sold at the market, which is why it's such a great market, really. Mm-hmm. So with those parameters, it's hard to get in.
Yeah.
I don't know if we'll ever use the fountain space or not, but it's there. It's ours if we want to. Yeah.
It was used for several years and was mostly craft people over there.
Yeah.
I remember. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it feels disconnected.
It's disconnected, it, yeah. It, and I don't think...
It feels like you're leaving to go over there. Yeah.
It would have to be a bunch of vendors over there, you know?
Right.
Like I never could just put, oh, you're over there today.
Yeah.
It's just not...
Yeah.
So that's the thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. It also gets... Well, it gets wet over there with the fountain. And
hot.
it gets hot mm-hmm. over there if you're not in the fountain. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is why it's such a nice spot for a fountain.
But
maybe not for a vendor. Let's see. That's enough about summer, I guess. The winter markets, the next one's this Saturday mm-hmm. from 10 to 2.
Yep.
And then another one in February.
Yeah, on Valentine's Day.
Day. Yeah. Perfect.
Valentine's so Day what kind of stuff are we finding at the winter market?
I mean, you know, it's
winter squashes and
wide
onions.
Selection. Yeah, root mm-hmm. veggies. Yeah, we've got some farmers coming. You know, there's, of course, crafters there and all our lovely bakers. We've got herbalists selling their oils and salves and lotions and stuff like that. What else? Preserves. People are selling, jams. It's been really neat to see what people bring and what's there. And I think this is an event that we'd like to continue on for next year. And our hope is that our farmers can plan now to grow things that will be able to be sold at the winter market. So I think I would encourage the community to show up and support it, because this is kind of like our trial year, and if we get the response that we're looking for, then we hope to grow it and continue mm-hmm. on.
Is February the last one for this year?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then you'll have
March
and April off.
Well,
to
it's
grow.
Intense applications
preparation. You're right. Yeah, you don't get it off, but
nobody
can come and buy anything at the market, and then and then in May.
May 2nd is our opening day.
Ooh.
Yeah.
It's the 2nd.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there you have it. You're busy for the next few months.
Yeah.
we're close to the end of our time together here. It's almost 9 o'clock. What more can we mention about what's coming up, either for this event, for the farmers market? Anything you want to highlight about the library garden? When does that open up?
Oh yeah, well it's always open.
Okay.
It's always open. Yeah, it's such a beautiful space. Definitely visit in July. I feel like July, it is just primo. It's so mm-hmm. beautiful. But it's always there for a space for the community to use. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And it'll be, we're going to put in hanging baskets this year. And we just want people to use it. A lot of families are starting to use it to come in as a place to move and let their kids play. But it's a beautiful place all year round, especially as the plants start coming up in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we have, we're starting now, this at the last day of January, we'll start with some of our first gardening classes. We'll have a sprouting class. We have Emily Levine from Red Wheelbarrow Produce is going to be teaching how to start tomatoes and other vegetables for your garden. And she's just a wealth of information. Mm-hmm. So she'll be there on January 31st. So don't miss that. And then, Diane Green will have a seed starting class mm-hmm. at the library soon. So we're just rolling into the how to grow food in North Idaho stuff coming up here in the next couple months.
Okay.
Yeah.
Say again that the seed starting class. What
seed
day
starting
is that?
Class with Emily will be on January 31st. It's part of a natural connection. So there'll be
several
workshops that day.
Mm-hmm.
She's part of that one. Mm-hmm. There's also like how to do your own microgreens and sprouts
mm-hmm.
indoors, which is kind of like winter gardening, to have your own fresh food.
If you're interested in the library, by the way, and if you're interested in, I guess, not just upcoming events at the library, but kind of behind the scenes, what's going on over there, I suggest you tune in next week on Wednesday. I believe we have somebody from the library scheduled to come in. I think Vanessa, the library director mm-hmm. is going to be here next Wednesday to talk with Chris about an upcoming expansion, along with board president Amy Flint. So learn about that expansion, and I'm sure they'll be here for the hour talking about everything else library business related. Hey, also next week, I believe Phil is going to be talking about the Winter Carnival on Tuesday, and we'll be talking, is it already the end of January next week? That's shocking. That means I'll be talking to some of the cast and crew from the upcoming performance, Cheaper by the Dozen, on Thursday, here on the morning show. So tune in for that. Since I'm running down the list of upcoming programming in the morning, the Homestead Act is our topic of conversation on the Monday Community Conversations, our little history show. The Homestead Act and early homesteaders in North Idaho, 8 o'clock. It's now 9 o'clock, and our time draws to a close. It's time for Bird Note. Thank you, Olivia. Thank you, Kara, for joining us. Thank you, Jen, Jackson Quintano from the Pro Voice Project, for coming in a little earlier to talk about the event tonight. OBGYN Care tonight is at the library at 5:30 till 7 o'clock. An important community conversation, and then the farmers market and the seed swap this weekend, starting at 10 o'clock for both of those at the library in that community space. Seed swap is over at noon, and the farmers market extends till 2. Carrie, thanks for coming in.
Good to see you.
Nice to see you.
Good conversation today.
Mm-hmm. It was.
Mm-hmm. Thank busy, you both.
Busy morning here, and now it's on to Bird Note. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thank you both for coming.
Thank you, Jack.
See you.